You are Locked On NBA Draft, your daily podcast on the NBA Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On NBA Draft. My name is Richard Stamen, known as Mavs Draft on Twitter. Got a really good episode for you today featuring Locked On Grizzlies' Sean Coleman. He's really familiar with the Tennessee guys, so we talked about Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson. I'm also going to talk to you just myself about Josh Christopher, but today's episode is brought to you by the live NBA Draft Show that we have on Locked On coming up next week on draft night. It's going to feature NBA Draft guru Chad Ford and the GOAT, the NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Corrales. They will all be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get local experts' analysis with each pick, followed by the Locked On NBA and YouTube today, and watch our live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, along with the draft. So really exciting what we've got coming up in the next 9 days till the draft. It's crazy. It's single digits away. Obviously not quite as long of a process as the 2020 process, but it feels like it's been a lot. So really excited for draft night. We'll get into it though. I'm going to start with Sean Coleman. I had a conversation with him. Hope you enjoyed it. And then I'll end this with Josh Christopher's scouting report. And if you're new to this, basically I break down, Sean and I are going to do this whole way. I'll talk it through, but we basically will just give everything you need to know about these three prospects, trying to give you three a week for me, as I do these, but hope you enjoy and see you after the interview. All right, Sean. So let's just jump right into it. Keon Johnson has been a polarizing player in the NBA draft community. I think he's one of the hardest evaluations I have had all year. You know, 6'4 and a half, 6'5, somewhere in that range, with a 6'7 wingspan, 185 pounds. Didn't really show out at college this year, only averaged 11 points per game, 2.5 assists with 2.5 turnovers, 3.5 rebounds, 45% from the field, and 27% from three, with only 70% from the line. So he's a hard evaluation. Give me your sales pitch on why I should be buying Keon Johnson, or why I shouldn't, because I know you're very involved with Tennessee and know that roster up and down.
Yeah. So, and first off, thank you for having me, Richard. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Yeah, when it comes to Keon Johnson, the pros are this: you have a lot to work with. The way that I describe Keon Johnson is this: it's the word work. Number one, it's his willingness to work. Number two, it's the fact that there is a lot to work with. So those two things are a positive. The third one, though, is a relevant con. There's a lot to work on. And the things that are going to have to be worked on are the things that are probably the most valuable aspects of what you're looking at when it comes to a lottery prospect. So, for instance, what sets Keon apart is his athleticism and his, in my opinion, elite ceiling when it comes to defense. The thing about it is, though, is that for a lot of guys who are his age, who have his athleticism, record-breaking athleticism and leaping ability, by the way, they don't know what to do with it. Keon Johnson, at a young age, with not that much of a background compared to many other lottery prospects, it's the fact he knows what to do with it. It's functional athleticism with him in terms of his quickness and leaping ability. On defense, the ability to stay with his defender, the IQ to know what he can do in moving short spaces to deflect and steal balls, the unnatural of it. Now, well, not unnatural, but the rare ability for a guard to rebound and have different ways that he can create blocks. He can alter shots on the perimeter, recovery blocks if for some reason he's beat in transition. He is a very resourceful defender due to not only being athletic, but also knowing how to use that athleticism. On offense, that athleticism is his basis. Again, his ability to cut in transition as a finisher, in the half court offense, as a lob threat or someone to pass on a back screen. All those things are certainly there on Keon, but there's the added nuances of he's a pretty underrated playmaker. Though he struggles with ball handling in his shot, we'll get into that in a second, he also is a very, very good mind. You saw a few plays at Tennessee where though he didn't have the ball handling to get to the rim, he reacted to what the defense was showing him by quickly giving a pass off to another teammate, making the read and the cut to the basket, and receiving the pass from his teammate to finish. So the work ethic, the IQ, and the basis when it comes to athleticism, all that are really good things to bet on when it comes to Keon Johnson. The problem is that for a player his size, you really need to have clear offensive strengths. And right now, self-initiated offensive strengths as well, right now, those are works in progress. His shot, his ball handling, his decision-making, all those things have a long way to go. Did not take a pull-up three this year, 46 catch-and-shoot three-point opportunities, 27% of them made. A decent pull-up game, which could give you a basis to work with, but the ball handling, the shot creation, and the decision-making are all things that are going to take a while to really, really develop. So when it comes to those lottery selections, in my opinion, a lot of teams want clear offensive upside, and they also want some type of place to work with offensively. That's not there with Keon right now, so that could make him someone that's a bit harder to peg and also could make him an option that falls on the board come draft day.
Yeah, and I like all of what you just said. I think his motor and athleticism combo makes him pretty dang hard to beat defensively. Like, when he's on ball defensively, he's a monster. He's a monster off ball too. Like, his recovery ability, like you said, on both on ball and off ball is just absolutely massive. Like, it's a huge swing skill, but unfortunately he is a tweener. He's not really a guard and he's not a wing. So like, what does that leave him offensively? So I got two questions for you. And the first one is, do you buy his mid-range shooting? Because I see a bunch of those mid-range shots. That seems like the only jump shots I ever see him making are those turnaround mid-range post fades, something like that. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I do. But it's a bit of a weird way to buy it, I guess. And here's what I mean by that. I think that the fundamentals, the mechanics are certainly there for him to be able to have that a part of his offensive game, to have that mid-range level as a part of his game to complement what he can do at the rim. The issue that's there with Keon Johnson, I want to give John Hollinger credit because he did a very good job of pointing it out. Because Keon does not have the same experience that a lot of these other lottery talents have, the overall experience of knowing how to create that space or being able to have different ways of getting into his shot form, he's very limited there. So the shot itself, I think, something you could work with. But the, I guess, experience, whatever word you want to call it, nuance is what I'll go with, the craftsmanship of knowing different ways of how to find that mid-range shot, that's where he's got to work. And though the fundamentals are there, for that to be a consistent, reliable part of his game, I think the craftsmanship aspect of it, of knowing how to set that shot up, that's something that's going to take a while. So I buy it. It's just going to be a few years before it becomes a reliable part of his game that teams have to respect.
Yeah, I completely agree, which feeds into my second question. What do you think is the biggest con or area of improvement for Keon Johnson? Do you think it's the lack of a left hand? Do you think it's the shot creation / shot making, just the overall general scoring, or the fact that he plays out of control at times and it feels like the game just hasn't slowed down for him? Like, how would you rank those three issues?
The slowing down aspect of things, I think that with the right NBA coaching, because again, let's be honest, me and you have talked about it before, I don't think that Rick Barnes is the best when it comes to developing the offensive game of prospects. So in the right, and I think another big situation with Keon, Rich, is he's got to land in the right situation. I think Memphis, the team that I obviously cover and cheer for, would be a great selection. But beyond that, the right coaching staff, if he lands with a good offensive mind, I think that he'll be able to dictate how to slow his game down. So that's probably third on that list of things that you mentioned. Second would be the ball handling and the ability to become ambidextrous and knowing how to use both of his hands to, number one, become some type of facilitator, which helps out his offensive game, but also to match the ball handling up with how fast he moves. Like, if it's a straight line ability to get to a spot and create a shot, that's where Keon's going to have an easier time doing it. But if it's creating the space while he gets there, he becomes a big liability when it comes to potentially turning the ball over. So using that left hand and the ball handling is the big thing for me. But the number one thing is certainly the shot making and the shot creation, because you've got to be able to start somewhere. And with the fact that he shot so low on just catch and shoot 3-point opportunities, it's very hard for someone who's not a significant facilitator at his size, despite his athleticism, to survive in the NBA if he has no sort of shot at all. So he's got to start somewhere with his shot. You just don't know where that somewhere is right now. So that's the biggest concern for me.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes him have such a wide range for me, is like I could see him going as high as like 9 or even 8 to Orlando, because Orlando's identity is defense. And like we've talked about, that's far and away his biggest strength. But I could also see him falling to someone like Atlanta, just because there's so many concerns with his offensive game. Where do you see that as a similar range, like 8 to 20?
I do. And like I say, I really do think, I think that Keon would be, he's someone like we've talked about. We talked about, I'm not comparing his game to Cam Reddish, but I'm giving it as an example, or Goga, who's in Indiana, the backup center that the Pacers took at 18 a few years ago. I think Keon has got to go somewhere where he's going to see playing time. It does not seem to me that Keon is someone who you need to sit here and basically redshirt. He needs playing time. So I think that while he needs to at least go to a young team with a good coaching staff, a Memphis makes sense for me. A Orlando certainly makes sense. A New Orleans makes sense to me. Some place like a Golden State, that doesn't make that much sense to me, because they're looking to win now and he's not going to get that playing time. So that 8 to 20 range certainly makes sense. A New York and Atlanta. I think the keys for him are going to a team that's got a young roster, that has a good offensive mind making decisions for that roster, and where he'll get some type of consistent role on an immediate basis so he can get minutes to develop his game. But that 8 to 20 range certainly makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so let's go to best case, worst case scenario. So I have him, let's start with worst case. We'll end on a positive. So his worst case scenario for me, I put that his jump shooting doesn't become at least like even respectable, where you have to close out like better than Andre Roberson or in like kind of like Lou Dort. But you want to get a little bit better than that in terms of respect, not necessarily percentages, because I know Lou Dort actually got in like the 30s, but I think his jump shot makes him unplayable, right? Like that's entirely what the worst case scenario comes down to, correct?
Correct. At the end of the day, defense is excellent, but we've seen it. Defense is a lot of times not as important as consistent offense, especially in high leverage and playoff situations. So I agree completely. If you look at some of the statistics out there, I feel that a kind of a bottom idea of what Keon would be is a Bruce Brown, Andre Roberson, those guys who certainly have a defensive calling card, but you can't really rely on them as more than maybe your 8th or 9th guy on a roster. And even at then, it's questionable because they don't have offense. I think that is correct. If he doesn't get his shot there, he becomes maybe an 8th or 9th guy at best in a rotation. And without having some type of offensive go-to, it's very hard to survive. So I certainly think he gets a second contract in the NBA, but if he doesn't develop a shot in his first 2 or 3 years, it's very hard for him to see him having a relevant career.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's go to the opposite end now. And best case scenario, mine comes down to the opposite. It's literally the game slows down and jump shooting is there. Walk me through what a best case scenario is for him.
So I talked with Parker Fleming, who over at Grizzly Bear Blues does the Long View podcast. I know that that's someone you've talked with as well. Found an interesting stat that allowed for both Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson to both be in this. Freshmen who have played at least their number of minutes during their freshman season with an assist percentage above 20%, steal percentage above 2.5, and block percentage above 2. And there was a range of prospects that are a range of NBA players that showed the range that I think makes sense for Keon. At the bottom of that is a Bruce Brown. At the top of that is a player like a Marcus Smart or a DeAnthony Melton or somebody along those lines. I think Keon's best case scenario is as a Marcus Smart level type player, but instead of relying on his size like Smart does, he relies on his athleticism. Marcus Smart is a player who has a 38 career field goal percentage and 32 career 3-point percentage, but he's averaged 9.5 shots for 4 out of the last 5 years. I think Keon could actually be a bit better version of that because he has a better finishing ability. So a best case scenario is never someone who has a shot as a strength, but does enough as a resourceful scorer to stay relevant on offense. So an athletic Marcus Smart to me would kind of be the upside of a Keon Johnson. If that shot ever lands, you're looking at potentially a guy who maybe can even get 1 to 2 all-star appearances.
Dang, I like that ceiling. I think that's probably in line with how I see it. I think it's a slim chance he gets there.
Agreed.
But if he does, you know, you hit. Like, his ceiling is, he's boomer bust to me. I mean, I'm going to be 100% honest. I know you said you can definitely see him getting that second contract. I'm not even sure about that. Like, if the offense is that bad, I don't know if it negates the defense. I'm very scared of his floor, but I love his ceiling. So any final closing thoughts you have on Keon before we go to Jaden Springer?
I'll say this, and I've said it again, there's a lot of bias when it comes to me, obviously. That's why Rich has been kind enough to let me talk about these two prospects with them going to the University of Tennessee. There's bias because they played at Tennessee, but for both of these prospects, I know it can be overrated, but it really makes a difference for these two players. Their work ethic, their attitudes, and their desire to be as good as they possibly can, I think really stands out. You've seen it in Springer's workouts. You've seen it in how hard Keon worked for his workout at the Combine. It's not going to be a character issue or a effort issue with either of these two players, and that's why they're easy to love as players and people to cheer for. So that's something that certainly fits the bill of both of these players.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you said it best. So the Tennessee guys are probably two of the most fun players. We'll get to Jaden Springer in just a moment, but I really appreciate you talking about Keon. We'll come right back and just pick it right back up with Jaden Springer.
This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you ever need. Why endure often pointless and seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer? With Rock Auto, you can save time and money. Why choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and the prices are reliably low for every single customer. They have everything you would ever need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. So go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On, and that's two words, LOCKED space ON, and their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
All right, and welcome back. Still with Sean Coleman of Locked On Grizzlies. Going to go now to Keon Johnson's teammate, Jaden Springer, who I don't think he participated in the combine. Correct me if, or actually, no, I'm incorrect. I don't think he played in the games is what it was, but he measured at 6'4 with 6'8 wingspan. He's very young. He's still 18, I think, till September. Weighs 202 pounds, just really strong. And on the year he was a freshman, he averaged 12.5 points per game, 3 assists per game, 3.5 rebounds, 1 steal. And that was on 47% shooting with 43.5% from 3 with very limited sample size. Only took 46 threes for the year, so just over 1 a game. And 81% from the line, and that's actually out of 100 attempts. So that's real sample size. The story with Jaden Springer, I mean, I think it's just comes down to upside, upside, upside with a decent amount of floor too, of course. But walk me through the same way, you know, we did with Keon. Walk me through this, the pros and cons of Jaden Springer.
Sure. And so basically when you look at guys this young, Rich, is that you look at these guys, you start with their physical tools. Well, with Keon, the athleticism jumps off the page. With Springer, the size and strength at the guard position jumps off the page. But again, what separates them from just being one of a dozen guys and what makes them potential lottery prospects, they know how to create advantages with their physical strengths. With Keon, it's the functional athleticism. With Jaden Springer, it is the functional strength and size. He knows how to use his size to create a difference. On defense, I've heard many say, I'm not sure if I've heard you say it, but I think that you agree with this. He arguably is the best point of attack defender in this draft class. And for him to be also one of, if not the youngest players in this draft class, for that to be said about him, that is a unique but very, very valuable floor to show that he could be a two-way player. His ability to keep his guys in front of him and not let them get past him with his lateral quickness also stands out. He has a very unique ability to really get up into the main ball handler's, you know, space when he's playing defense, and that disrupts the flow of that ball handler's ability to score, set up the offense, so on. It's great to have that type of presence to disrupt the defense at the top of any type of defensive scheme. But it's not just that. It's the awareness of knowing how to poke the ball free to be able to create turnovers, average 1.9 steals per 40 minutes in college. He is limited on his wingspan and in terms of his overall speed, but he does have the awareness to be able to create turnovers, to be able to help out on defense, to be able to use his size to not let his player, not let his opposition get space. And the other thing is, he legitimately can guard either of the guard spots and can hold his own, even in post-up situations, against threes. I mean, he's not going to be able to guard fours or fives, but on defense, his size and knowing how to use his size makes him very resourceful, just like Keon does. I think Keon has a bit of a higher ceiling as an overall NBA player, creating a defender, creating turnovers, being that lockdown type defender. But Jaden Springer, there's a reason why his defense is his calling card right now. It's because he knows how to use his size and can be very effective in multiple defensive schemes. That is certainly a strength. On offense, the strength is his ability to drive as a scorer using his body with the ability to get to the free throw line, 4 free throw attempts per game, 80% clip. He knows how to score at the rim, can drive very well. His ball handling, while it does still need to be developed, it's pretty decent for a guy his age. But the other thing is his ability as a facilitator. He has a keen ability on the move to know how to make the right pass. Doing a dribble drive, being able to score or pass to set up his teammates on a kick out for a three, on a dish down low for a dunk. He can do all those things. So that certainly stands out as strengths. The cons, I don't know if he ever becomes elite or clearly a difference maker in any one area. Perhaps his defense. But I think that what stands out about Springer, Rich, is that despite being one of the younger guys in this draft, compared to other guys in his age range, he feels like he's one of the safer bets to have one of the higher floors. You feel Springer stands out as having one of the best chances of, in some way, shape, or form, being a significant NBA talent of all the freshmen that are in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a 180 on him recently. I know I talked on Locked On Grizzlies recently that, you know, he was a guy who I thought kind of was overhyped, and I thought the flashes were overstated, but now I've done just a 180 on that. And you kind of said, you know, you don't think he's elite at one area, which I would also knock on him as well, but there is one area I do think he has a chance to get elite at. And it's not the jump shooting with 43.5% from three and 81% from the line, as promising as that is. I think it's actually his ability to get to the rim, which, yeah, due to his strength, it's really going to propel him as a slasher. And I think that could get him over the hump of good slasher to great slasher. That's something that I really do see as like a swing skill. So, which actually feeds me into my next question for you, which is, what do you think is his biggest swing skill?
Yeah, no, it's that. It's my opinion. I would say the shot creation would be there. I don't know if Springer ever is going to be someone with enough quick twitch ability about him to consistently, number one, create his own shot, but the separation to get that shot off. But the biggest swing skill is exactly what you mentioned, because to me, it separates him from other point guard / combo guards his size. It's the resourcefulness as a driver / cutter, whatever it may be. It's not just the ability to get to the rim to make shots, but that's one. Can you make tough shots? That's two. Do you have the ability to not only make tough shots, but if you don't, draw fouls and make free throws? That's three. And then off all that scoring ability, add value as a passer as well, not only to kick out to other teammates for threes, but also find very good scoring opportunities for your teammates around the rim. That's four or five different ways Jaden Springer can add value as a dribble drive guy, as somebody getting to the rim. And with his size, it makes sense as to why that should be the part of the game that he features. So I think his resourcefulness as a guy getting to the rim, especially if he can do it more often on his own, off the dribble. He does a very good job of keeping his head up. That, to me, is his biggest swing skill, and it's a swing skill that I would bet on with his IQ, work ethic, and size as his body matures.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of see eye to eye on that too, because I think his shot creation is something that does need to be, you know, that's a swing skill. And especially, I don't think the shot creation going towards the basket is an issue. I think it's getting shot creation for threes is really what's going to be the biggest, you know, I guess, I'm about to make up a word here, but determiner. I guess I'm totally blanking on something. I probably sound really dumb right now, but I think that's going to be what determines his shooting upside, is how well he can create threes for himself. Because I don't have any, you know, issue with him spotting up or anything and hitting one dribble pull-ups, but how can he like hit step backs, things like that? That's a real, you know, legitimate question I have about Jaden. So one other question I had before we get into best case, worst case, and draft range is, who do you think is the better defender between Keon and Jaden Springer? Because this is something I go back and forth with. And then once I'll give my answer after you say yours.
Keon. And the reason why I say Keon is because, and it goes back to what defines my determination between these two. With Keon, there is a higher ceiling, but a lower floor. There is boom and there is bust with Keon. And on defense, the reason why I say he has a higher ceiling, I think that he has just as much ability to be a lockdown defender as Jaden does. But I think with the fact that I think Keon is a better rebounder, has a very, very elite ability to block as a guard, and also is probably going to be more active as a guy that can create turnovers, I think that he's going to be a defender who can impact the game in more areas defensively than Jaden Springer is. I do think Springer is going to be the more consistent defender, the guy who's going to be able to probably remain more consistent in a team scheme, not get beat as much when he's, you know, not necessarily off ball, but when he's guarding the guy directly, when it's one-on-one defense, and also someone who probably is going to foul less. So I will go with Keon, because I think that he has a more impactful way and in more ways can impact the game defensively. But consistency-wise, I think they're kind of even keel. I would be happy with either one of them with their defensive upside. I lean Keon, though, because I think athleticism is going to allow for him to impact the game in more ways.
I think you actually captured it really well. The short version I was going to say was, I think Jaden is going to be a better team defender, I guess. I'm not even confident in that. They're both gonna be great, but I do think that Keon has the stopper potential and Jaden has the very good potential with probably a decently higher floor. It's just Keon's defense is a higher ceiling. So I think we see eye to eye on that, right?
Yeah, no, that's it. Then forgive me for being wordy. I like to talk about the players I'm passionate about, but yes, that is the condensed version in a nutshell. So great analysis as always from you.
Hey, you know, I talk way too much on this podcast, so no worries. It is part of it helps more is better with the draft, I think. So let's get into projected draft range. Where's the earliest you could see him being taken and what's the latest for you?
I honestly think it's amazing how similar both these players are becoming. You're starting to see these two players be within 3 to 5 spots of each other on many big boards. John Hollinger yesterday, for instance, he had them at 19 and 20, I believe. It's amazing. I think that, you know, I'll let you say where you've got them on your big board, but I think 8 to 20. Like, I think that legitimately is there. I really think the hot spot, Rich, is going to be that probably 10 to 14 range, because he's worked out for Charlotte. He's worked out for the Spurs. He's worked out for the Pacers. I could certainly see OKC having interest. Of course, you know where my preference is at Memphis at 17, but that 8 to 20 range.
Yeah, I see pretty similar. I don't see him falling past Atlanta. That would be an absolute miracle if you are a Hawks fan. And then I don't see him going any earlier than like Sacramento or Orlando at 8. But even then, I don't think they would choose him at 8, but who knows? We've seen Keon be mocked to like 6 for half the season, and I don't think he would even sniff that now. So who knows? Like, it is a wide draft range. So what do you think is his worst case and best case scenario?
Yeah. So when it comes to a comp, I do think that when it comes to Jaden Springer, I think that in my honest opinion, the worst case scenario is a D'Anthony Melton, a guy who consistently is going to be able to make defensive to make a difference on the court defensively, especially as a team or on-ball defender, who also has the capability of being able to be a good shooter. The reason I go with De'Anthony Melton is a worst case scenario. You don't see the true facilitation ever develop outside of him being a dribble drive guy, and the ball handling is something that struggles. So De'Anthony Melton to me is a worst case scenario. I know that I've already, and this may be a bit of a cop out, I don't really know of the exact player for a best case scenario. De'Anthony Melton with handles. You would love to talk about a Kyle Lowry. I don't ever know if Jaden Springer becomes that trustworthy of a point guard, but some type of, you know, mold of a Marcus Smart, Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry type, you know, I don't really know how to describe it, but a combination of those three players, the Smart defense with the VanVleet shooting and at time flashes of Kyle Lowry's ball handling. Maybe Marcus Smart with handles. I don't really know the best way to describe the pro comp, but his best case scenario is someone that, again, not typically elite, but can add enough resourcefulness as a scorer and passer to be a guy who, despite his physical limitations, size-wise and agility-wise, still is more than capable of being an off-ball starter, being a combo guard starter for a sustainable winner. I think he does enough across the board to be that. So maybe Marcus Smart with handles is a good comp for him.
Yeah, I can see that. I personally don't have any comparisons yet. I think he is the hardest player to make a comparison to in this entire draft. And I've tried sticking with the roles as outcomes and things like that, where you said it best. I think Jaden's a shooting guard that can just destroy on both ends on a winning team. And, you know, it may not be in volume, but when he does things on the court, he does them at a high level. So do you have any closing statements on Jaden Springer?
Yeah, the other thing that really stands out to me is this, is that I know that something that, for instance, Memphis really highly values, and I think that across the NBA teams are starting to value more and more. We could talk about projections, talk about upside, so on and so forth. One other calling card of Jaden Springer, he is going to be a player. There's going to be turnovers. There's going to be things like that. But the outside the box score stuff, the inside the box score stuff, he's a guy who's going to consistently make positive plays. Value is going to constantly be in there. I think he's going to be a high net rating guy because positive plays consistently occur around him during his NBA career. I think that's going to be another standout thing for Jaden Springer.
Yeah, I agree with that. I love that. I love having you on to talk to any Tennessee player. You know, if Victor Bailey or someone just emerges next year, you know, you'll be the first person I'll call over. So thank you so much. And again, Sean, where can they find you?
They can find me at StatsSAC on Twitter. I'm glad to be a part of Locked On Family with Rich. I do a Locked On Grizzlies. You can find my written work over at Grizzly Bear Blues. But I look forward next year to coming on and campaigning for John Fulkerson to be a top 10 pick.
You will not be finding that campaign from me too. But thanks, Sean, as always.
Rich, always a pleasure, sir. Have a great one.
Big thanks to Sean for joining the show. When I come back, I'm going to talk about Josh Christopher, but first, I want to talk to you about BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing, and you track all the action at BetOnline. And same with the NBA Finals. You know, Game 6 is tonight, going to be a closeout game. Really exciting stuff. BetOnline will have you covered for that. So get all the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, and UFC MMA action. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get in the game as teams are really closing out the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device today to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. And use promo code LOCKEDON, and this time, instead of, you know, for Rock Auto, it's two words, this one will be one word. LOCKEDON, no space in there to use that promo code. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So for this final segment, I'm going to do a scouting report for Josh Christopher. He's someone who I put out my scouting report yesterday on Monday for one of the best upside swings, I think, outside of the lottery in the entire class. He's a two-way wing from Arizona State. Really just incredible upside, one of the best scorers and really good athlete in the class. but he's kind of boom or bust. So let me go over him again. If this is your first time listening, and that you skipped the Tennessee portion of this to hear this part of the show, what I do is I'll list out pretty much, I'll start with their stats, which I'll do in just a moment. Going to give you a little bit of selling point, what the general overview is on him as to what he is as a prospect, and then break down his pros, cons, and then just outlook, similar to a player, see, similar to projected draft range, what his role is, his worst case, best case, pretty much the whole book on what Josh Christopher is. So let's get started with it. For the year, he played 15 games. That I think was a little bit over half of Arizona State's game, so he missed a good amount of time. And I think his last game of the year, he got injured going up for a block, and never, and it was a monster block, and totally one of the totally worth it. Like, to an extent, it was one of the better highlights of the year, but unfortunately came back down on his back or something like that, and I think that's what did it for him. Could be wrong, but I'm like 90% sure, because he left mid game and never played again. So for the year, he averaged 14.3 points per game, 4.7 rebounds per game, 1.4 assists, a steal and a half per game, half a block per game, and 1.7 turnovers per game. And that was on 43% shooting from the field, 31% from three, and 80% from the free throw line. So he measures out, he at the combine, he was 6'4 and a half with a weighing 215, which is pretty decent size. And if you look at him, he's pretty muscular. That's pure muscle on 215. He doesn't really need to add weight. He just needs to keep getting stronger and holding that body together. His wingspan is plus 4.5. He's at a 6'9 wingspan, 8'5 standing reach. So, you know, 8'5 really doesn't matter. It's kind of irrelevant for a shooting guard because they're not going to be protecting the rim. That standing reach is for when centers go vertical and they put their hands up, can guys shoot over them? And for Josh Christopher, it's just not really a big deal. So that's kind of an irrelevant thing. That stat really only matters for forwards and up, mostly bigs though. He kind of has small hands, 8 3/4 was his width. Usually 9 is the bar, so it's nitpicking a quarter of an inch, but kind of stood out. The selling point with him is that you get a two-way shot-creating score, three-level score with some defensive upside. To go in a little bit more detail, the pros start with this. The athleticism and body control feed into a lot of his other strengths. On defense, he has insane recovery ability, which helps him really just get around misses on defense. Like, don't get me wrong, he has flaws on that area, but one-on-one, if you beat him to the spot, he can make it up right away because he's just so athletic. He's got good length, and his body control is ridiculous where you can kind of knock him off balance, but it's only for a split second and he recovers right back and it looks like he never even fell down or lost his balance or anything. And then on the offensive end, it helps him as a finisher. He can take contact. He shot, I think it was 70%. I should have had this pulled up, so bear with me. I'm pulling it up now. For the year, yep, 73% at the rim, which is incredibly impressive for a wing. Usually that's like big man numbers. The other things that go in his favor offensively are that he'll adapt just fine to a fast-paced offense. When he rebounds the ball, he immediately is looking down the court, trying to find offense, who's on the perimeter open for, you know, corner three, something like that. The traditional transition plays, he loves running in transition. He's very good at it. And that's why his athleticism is very functional. It's because he can do everything he wants in his most run play, which is transition. He has a really high motor. He loves basketball. I've gotten to talk to him at the combine, the virtual combine. I got to interview him for a minute. I just can't say enough good things about what his character and demeanor is just from that one. It was a few questions and he just loves basketball. He told me, you know, he was sorry. I can't even remember some of the names he gave me. There were guys I never heard of. He was like, oh yeah, I grew up watching this guy in like 2006. And I was like, wait, first of all, 2006, like you're, you know, I'm aging myself here, but like, I honestly don't know if he was old enough to watch basketball at this point, being a 19-year-old 15 years ago, but he, which makes me feel old, but that's a totally different side tangent. The point is like, he loves basketball and he will, that I think that can only help him as a student of the game where he's coachable and he wants to make himself better. And then the last thing is he has really quick hands on defense and he plays the passing lanes well. Going back to the game, he forces a lot of turnovers, 1.5 steals per game and half a block per game. 2 stocks is kind of a really good benchmark for a statistical upside defensively, and he clears that here. Well, he hits it. He hits that too, 1.5 steals and half a block. So That's really impressive. Now, the cons are, and one other pro actually, is that he can shoot over defenders. His jump shot is pretty good, but this will be a good transition into cons. His shot selection is pretty bad. That's why he shot 40%, 43% from the field and 31% from three, because he settled for unnecessarily difficult shots that he didn't need to settle for. So when he improves on that, I think you'll see the efficiency come. I don't think that's a skill in efficiency. That's a why are you taking the shot in efficiency. And I think at Arizona State, the amount of times, whether when it was he had the ball or someone else had the ball and he was doing this, everyone was open. At some point, they were holding their hands out. They're like, come on, pass the ball. And some of them would just shoot. Sometimes it was Christopher. I do wonder, though, if that was a function of the Arizona State just dysfunction. So who knows? And kind of like I just hinted at, he's a mild playmaker. He missed open players a lot. That is something I can't even deny. I think it's an area he has potential in, but I don't see him ever eclipsing like 4 assists per game tops. That's something that could hold him back. We'll see. He does need to get more consistent when he isn't taking bad shots. He can shoot over defenders, but he needs to do it consistently. There were a few games where he just missed the rim entirely just on so many jump shots, and it was very frustrating because it was unnecessary. He also pretty much had an equal assist to turnover ratio, again, feeding into that playmaking. So the playmaking and shot creation are far and away the biggest areas of improvement for him. But the last thing is a defensive negative, which is I spoke very highly of his one-on-one defense. He does need to get better at team defense, and in particular the area where it's going to hurt him the most on that front is pick and roll defense. He doesn't fight through screens very well. He can get burned running pick and roll. He either gambles or he just is so lost in screens that he's eliminated from the play entirely, and then someone else is left to clean up his mess, which not always his fault. It could just, I mean, young players aren't good at defending the pick and roll unless your name is Usman Garuba and he's a big man. So it's a little bit unfair, I think, right now to judge him on that, but it is a flag that I would like to see him improve on. So some players I wrote down as similarities to him, they're not the sexiest names despite me giving him star upside. There's really one star of the four, and I'll lead with him. That's Joe Johnson. If he gets the creation down and the playmaking better, I think that's a real possibility. Ricky Davis, if he ends up being, that outcome is pretty much if he ends up being an empty stats guy. Terrence Ross could be a pretty good median outcome where he's a defensive, a neutral player defensively and a sharpshooter offensively and just microwave off the bench. That's what he has been in Orlando since he got traded for Serge Ibaka. And then the last one was Dante Jones. They had some similarities back in his Indiana day. Dante actually wasn't as bad as he gets a rap for, you know, in his Cleveland days and things like that. To close out his career, he's pretty bad and kind of a dirty player. But like in Indiana, he had a season where it doesn't sound anything sexy because it was only 25 minutes a game. But 46% shooting, 10 points a game, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, half a steal, half a block. And unfortunately, in that season, he also shot 12.5% from 3 on barely any attempts. So imagine him shooting. It'd be like a better shooting Dante Jones, who was pretty good defensively. So a little bit of a blend of all of those is something realistic for him. The draft range for him, I think it starts the second the lottery ends. The second Golden State or whoever is picking at that 14 spot goes, that's when the Josh Christopher range opens up. I think Washington could take a swing at him. That'd be a really good swing if they think Bradley Beal's time is running out in the Capitol. Could also see him, my other favorite fit, and this is where I do ultimately see him going, is Memphis at 17. They need that high offensive upside, that high upside just in general swing next to John Morant. They've gone for really good floor values, and it's paid off. They made the playoffs this year through the play-in game. But to elevate themselves from 8 seed to like 5 seed, 4 seed range, granted, obviously, John Morant wasn't healthy this year, the whole year. I think that does need to be factored in, and I don't think this is the team's ceiling by any means. But the difference of going from a 4 seed, like I think their realistic expectation next year should be a top 5 seed. And in the future, if they can get Josh Christopher to hit at next to John Morant, I mean, that just unlocks a whole nother element. And that could be one of the next great young teams in this league. So I really like the fit there. I'd be honestly surprised if he doesn't go there. But I also could see them maybe moving back and taking him. I think there's just a lot there. I know he's close with Tayshaun Prince. He knows John Morant pretty well. And it's an organization that values, relationships. So we'll see what happens with that. His expected role, I have him volume score with defense. So a guy who could probably get you 20 any given night, maybe per per minute. You know, it averages out to 20 at worst, where like Terrence Ross, the kind of player who plays 25 minutes a game, and per 36, he has really nice numbers. But he just doesn't do a lot of creating for others and things like that. His worst case scenario is that the jump shooting doesn't translate and that makes him unplayable. And then also he just doesn't make his teammates better and he's a black hole. That is a very realistic outcome where he's very good, but he just isn't good for a team. His best case scenario really revolves around jump shooting translating, kind of the opposite, and just playmaking. Even if it's 2 assists a game and just low turnovers, that checks all the boxes he needs. So that's the Josh Christopher scouting report. He's one of my absolute favorite players in this entire draft. I'm all in on him. I mean, for a guy outside of the top consensus, you know, top 20, I consider myself very high on him. I currently, and pretty much my big board is pretty much finalized. I have him at 22. This draft is loaded. I mean, I have Jalen Johnson at 21, which I can understand the criticism I'm getting there. There's a lot of risk that goes on there, both on and off the court. So who knows with that, but that is the Josh Christopher, Keon Johnson, and Jaden Springer episode. I hope you enjoyed this. I got one more episode before the draft, and then, you know, the one after the draft, I will obviously be doing a draft recap, summer league preview, things like that. Probably knowing me, I'll just highlight like some undrafted free agents or something, because that's just who I am. But in the meantime, if you can't get enough NBA draft content, I highly recommend that you check out the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey. It features some very good personalities such as Chad Ford, Brian Scalabrine, former GM Ryan McDonough, and then maybe yours truly is one of the analysts with another NBA Draft, Locked On NBA Draft host in Rafael Barlow and the Draft Dummies. But who knows, who's really to say if that is the case, but I've heard rumors that that is the case. So go ahead and check that out, and I'll see you all next week. Can't wait for the draft. It's finally winding down. I'll have a really fun episode for you next week, and we might have some stuff in the works for a potential last-minute show with all the hosts, kind of just doing a Q&A on prospects. So we'll see. But thank you so much for listening. Hope this is a good episode, and can't wait to see you all next week.